Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
It's not such a wonderful day today, particularly if you happen to be living in Dublin, particularly for businesses living in Dublin, because the Cabinet is today expected to agree that Dublin should move to, well, level three. They've confused everybody because they said, of course, there are levels and the new plan was living with COVID was going to be clear, crystal clear. But it's about as clear as mud because at the moment we're in kind of 2.5-ish and they want to move to three. Then they said 3.5 and then they said, but there may be extra restrictions, but it won't be a four. So what the hell is it? And unfortunately, last night, NPHET gave the bad news for the restaurants and I suppose gastro pubs of Dublin that they may only be able to serve outdoors if they have an outdoor area to serve in, and they won't be able to serve indoors and they'll only be allowed to do takeaways. Now, this has devastated the business, if indeed this is the case. We won't know it a little bit later on today, but Adrian Cummins, who's the CEO of the Restaurant Association of Ireland, joins me on the line. Good afternoon to you, Adrian.
Good afternoon.
This is devastating news for your members, I imagine. I mean, I did see some tweets this morning from bar owners or gastropub owners who were very concerned and very worried. It's taken them, you know, the guts of 6 or 7 weeks to try and get their businesses back up and running. They're still struggling. And now they're being told, sorry, lads, you're going again.
It's shocking news, devastating news for our industry at a time where many business owners across the country have invested nearly €50,000 in getting their premises up to a compliance for the regulations that have been put upon us since June of this year to make our premises safe for customers, safe for staff. And the news coming out of NPHET last night that they want to effectively shut down hospitality in Dublin for the next number of weeks.
3 weeks till October the 5th. And mind you, that's only if the cases reduce. It'll be October the 5th. If the cases continue to rise, I can imagine that would be extended.
Yeah, there's a lot of news circulating today that there possibly is the long-term strategy is to keep our industry closed as long as possible, and you could effectively see us closed until next year.
Is it contradictory? Because my thinking is, according to NPHET, in relation to public health, the idea was to try and reduce the number of people in a home, reduce the amount of house parties. And now we're saying we're going to close hospitality, which is where people go to avoid having house parties in the first place. And now we're, because it is a supervised environment, obviously, because they have to keep social distance and there is screens between, you know, the restaurant people and they'll have masks on and obviously you would enforce those rules, you know, whatever rules are necessary. So is it kind of contradictory because we're now going to encourage people to stay at home and gang up together and drink?
Absolutely. And the households is where the problem is and house parties especially is where the real problem is, and the government won't face up to that issue to deal with it head on and to penalise those people that are breaking the regulations or the guidelines the government want to bring in for every citizen in the country. But they are going to penalise the hospitality industry. 50,000 people could lose their jobs this weekend. People that have mortgages to pay, families to feed.
I spoke to a barman this morning and he's selling his car tomorrow.
And he said, yeah. And these people came back to work on the 29th of June. You can't turn on and turn off an industry like this and continue to do so. The roadmap was to live with the virus. This is not living with the virus. This is reacting,
I suppose, to a virus, isn't it?
This is reacting to a virus, but it's also making sure that that everybody's treated fairly and equally in this. This is about.
But, do you believe, Adrian, do you believe your industry is being treated unfairly? I mean, for example, I'm sure you've spoken to NPHET, or not you personally, but I'm sure there has been communications to NPHET in relation to the science or the evidence of the number of cases that are coming from the hospitality industry. And from what I've seen and the evidence I've seen, it isn't disproportionate when you consider that people are together having a good time. That, you know, there is many cases or as many cases coming from every other industry, including meat factories, food processing companies, the home. And when we talk about the home, the obvious reason why there's more in the home is because people are together for longer periods of time. And I don't think you can condemn people for being together in their own family home, but that unfortunately is always going to be a risk. But do you believe that your industry has been unfairly targeted?
Absolutely. They didn't close down the meat factories for 3 weeks when the meat factories were the source of the infection in Kildare and an entire three counties had to close down for a number of weeks down there. Dublin is the capital of the country. It's the powerhouse of the economy for Ireland. And when you close down an entire sector like this, you put 50,000 people that work directly in our industry are now going to be unemployed. But what about all those that supply into our sector, all those suppliers that need to be paid? What about those businesses that have to pay their mortgages to the banks? When the moratorium is now gone at the end of September, what about all those businesses that don't have won't have the money to pay commercial rates now that rates have to be paid? So,
and income tax returns, of course, in November as well. Exactly. But Adrian, what about those restaurants and gastropubs outside of Dublin? Are they going to be affected now or disproportionately affected? Because you will have a lot of people, say, from Dublin who were meant to have maybe a staycation in Galway, Cork, Limerick, wherever it happens to be. And now they're being told, actually, now, obviously, there's it's an advice not to leave your county. So they're now going to cancel, maybe, their staycations.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to struggle to find a European country that's doing exactly what Ireland is doing to close down an entire sector like what they're doing now. No other European country is doing the same, has approached this in the same way. We seem to be an outlier. We seem to be unique in our approach to it. Obviously, we want to play our part in this, but there's been no consultation with us, no compromise given. Even if it was to keep our doors open, so that you would reduce our capacity, which is now reduced down to 75%. Even if we reduce that down to 50%, at least our doors were open. This seems to be a carte blanche. Close the doors. And if you can have outdoor dining, which 90% of businesses
don't have.
I mean, that to me is people that are trying
Even if you had, we're living in Ireland, for God's sake. You know, I mean, the weather might be good for this weekend, but sure, it'll be raining for the rest of the week anyway. So that's not even going to be a possibility. But look, my sympathy goes out to your members. I understand the government's point of view from a public health point of view, but in saying that, I think that your industry has been unfairly targeted and has been for certainly the last 2 or 3 months. Thank you very much indeed, Adrian Cummins, who is the CEO of the Restaurant Association of Ireland. On the line as well as Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Good afternoon to you, Louise.
Good afternoon, Niall.
Louise, are these restrictions? I mean, firstly, let's talk about the clarity. Stephen Donnelly doesn't seem to be believed as mixed messaging. We started off at a 2, then we were Dublin as a 2.5, or maybe a little bit more. Then we said Dublin are going to go to a 3. Actually, no, maybe it'll be a 3.5, but a little bit extra, so is it a 3.7? They're discrediting their own plan before we've even got it going.
And the other important thing to remember, Niall, and I don't think this is going to be lost on your listeners either, is they've had 6 months to do this plan. So this plan has been very much heralded. But on the day they announced it, they announced, a five-stage plan with 6 stages.
It became clear to me last night, Louise, when I had two listeners on the air arguing over whether they could leave Dublin or not to go to work, right? And neither of them, they were like denying me like Christ on the cross, saying, no, Niall, you'll be arrested. And I said, you won't be arrested if you're going to work. It's a necessary journey. If you have to go to Drogheda to work, for example, or come from Drogheda into Dublin to work, that's a necessary journey. You won't be arrested. But this is the confusion they've created. Nobody's clear about what actually is going on anymore.
No, and I think the thing we need to really focus on here is that people want to do the right thing. They just need clear messaging to be able to do the right thing. I haven't spoken to a single solitary person who says, I want to find out what the advice is so I can break it. People are telling me, I want to find out what the advice is so I can understand it and I can implement it in my own life. I want to do the right thing. Now, we have had chaos. Even the government ministers and junior ministers themselves have acknowledged that the messaging hasn't been great thus far. I think that needs to change. But I also think we need to shift from this culture of blame and finger pointing and get into doing what we can do well.
But we're looking for leadership, and some of the best, Professor Donaldson, who has been acclaimed to be one of the best disease eradicators in the world, sadly passed away 2 years ago. He rid the world of smallpox and all these other things, and he said the most important thing is leadership and good guidance from a government into what direction you go in. We're not getting that. Initially, we got it a bit at the start, and even the phase plan, as much as I didn't agree with everything Leo and Simon were doing, the phase plan gave people a date on a calendar. Well, look, we can go to the cinema on that day, we can get married on this day, you know, the restaurants and bars will be open on this day, maybe we might get to go on holidays in September, October, but so at least there was a target for people. All we've done now is we've given this kind of chaos a name. And that's all it is. It's chaos. We have now an industry on its knees. We can't, I mean, only this morning, the head of the WHO said there might never be a vaccine.
Yeah.
So, what, so,
had,
so what are we going to do, Louise?
The last week saying he thought there was going to be a vaccine in early 2021. So, I mean, I dearly wish he'd pick up the phone and ring the head of the World Health Organization just tell him.
Absolutely. Well, Leo Varadkar seems to be absolutely abundantly clear. We've had another vaccine failure, I believe, in Australia. There was one in Oxford failure last week. And now Mike Ryan from the WHO is saying there may never be a vaccine. So the point is that
we need to concentrate on what we can do. Right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that we can do is we can stop saying we're going to ramp up this and ramp up that, and we can actually get the testing capacity in place so that we have the swabbing right, we have the testing right, and we have the tracing right. That enables you to drill down so that if there has to be a restriction on movement, that you can do it on a postcode basis. That's what they're doing in the north. You can drill it down to a small number of houses, to a small community, and you can eradicate it that way. Now, you know, we need a plan to get ahead of the virus and test it.
Are we focusing too much? Don't get me wrong. The testing, tracing, and tracking is very important to try and, you know, close it down for ourselves so we know what's going on. But when I spoke to Professor Moynihan last week from Maynooth University, he said to us that the PCR testing, because it's very sensitive and we're running it through 35 to 45 cycles, as Killian Gaskin said, we're picking up old cases of COVID-19 or coronavirus that could indeed be 5 to 6 weeks old. In other words, it's not a proper indication of how many people are actually infected at the moment. So are we, you know, what we should be looking at is obviously hospitalizations, ICUs and mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So are we focusing too much on how many cases we have?
Well, what we need to focus on is what we can do and how we can get to level one. That should be the focus. It seems that the focus is on how they can get us up to the next level, up to the higher level, and more restrictions. I'd like to see a bigger focus and a laser-like focus on where the areas of concern are. There hasn't been a compelling case made for concern around restaurants. So from what I have seen, restaurants have behaved very, very responsibly, mm-hmm. and those gastropubs have behaved very responsibly. So what they're saying to the government now is there's 50,000 jobs on the line in Dublin. Please, please, please explain to us why it is that we cannot open when they don't see that they're operating at a risk. They've also called, and no representative association, I think in the history of ever, called for more regulation and to come down hard on any breaches. But the Licensed Vintners Association have actually taken that step of saying to the government, come down hard on us if we breach it, but for God's sake, give us a chance. Give us a chance to open safely. Give us a chance to get this right. Work with us. Talk to us. Let us know how we can do it right. There's 50,000 jobs on the line.
And that's only direct. That's only directly, by the way.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. But the pandemic unemployment payment has just been reduced. Today is the day that it is reduced.
That's reduced, yeah.
And those people are going to be facing a very bleak couple of weeks.
I know. I spoke to a friend this morning. He's a barman, Louise. He's selling his car tomorrow. You know what I mean?
He's not the only. And I spoke to workers in Aer Lingus, and they're having to do the same. They're having to give up houses that they're renting and move back in with their parents.
But Louise, Louise, you're on the special COVID committee, okay? So you're hearing the evidence all the time,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and you're hearing contrary evidence. You're hearing anecdotal stories, etc. You know, I mean, there's no doubt there's a virus out there. There's no doubt, and I don't believe in any of these conspiracy theories, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that it is killing very, very vulnerable people. But thankfully, this particular virus, when I say thankfully, I don't mean that in a bad way, it's sparing our younger people, and it's sparing those generally under the age of 65. And sadly for those people over 65, they're most at risk. We need to protect them or shield them, if that's the right word to use, and spend mm-hmm. every resource we can in doing that. But meanwhile, we're continuing to, like other countries around Europe, with the exception of one or two like Sweden who have now been proven right, by the way, but I'm not going to get into that today. What we're doing is destroying people's lives, their lifestyles, their way of life, their quality of life. We're destroying everything, their businesses. We are going to see a multitude, an unquantifiable amount of secondary deaths from people not being diagnosed for diseases because we can't deal with non-COVID related incidents, despair, poverty, homelessness. It's all to follow. And many, many intelligent people have said we will look back at this as a monumental mistake in the way we've dealt with it. We're saying we're living with COVID, but we're not. We're just reacting every day to it and putting people out of work.
But that's why we need a plan. So one of the key tenets to this has to be to restart non-COVID care in our hospitals. Sinn Féin has published a plan. It's a 1.9 billion euro plan, but it is very, very necessary. The other thing we need to do is we need to have a focus on mental health. So the impact of this, of the shutdown, of restricted movement, of not being able to socialise and hug each other in a normal way, the impact of that on people's mental health is going to be absolutely catastrophic. Now, I would take one issue with you there, Niall, in relation to it doesn't really affect younger people. We don't know the long-term effects of this virus, so it is important that we try to get ahead of it and that we try to beat it. But in order to be able to beat it, we have to have clear messaging, we have to have test and trace, and we have to have a government that's providing leadership instead of chaos. And that is so, so badly needed. We also need to look at different sectors. So we need to look at the aviation sector and look at those workers in Dublin Airport and Aer Lingus and all of the other airlines who are now living, as one lady told me, 250 euros for 2 weeks' work was all of the wages that she got.
I had a guy on last week, I think Shannon, 60 quid in 2 weeks.
They have to pay their rent, they have to feed their kids, they have to do all of that. Their lives are being ripped asunder. The aviation sector needs specific measures put in place. We need to have a proper updated green list. We need to know how we can do things safely. And we need the focus from the government to shift from how they're going to get us to level four into how they're going to get the whole state into level one. Push back all the time. We need to be fighting the virus. We need to be pushing back against it. And in order to do that, we need that clear messaging. We need the test and trace. And we need to, you're right, we need to get back to some semblance of living and not just constantly.
Because there's more to living, you know, I mean, than just biologically being alive. I mean, we are human beings. There's been great research done in relation to human beings and primates and how social isolation can have a fierce damage on our mental health and our physical health as well, because of course when we isolate we don't feel too good. And we spoke to Professor Collins last week, a very eminent man from Tala Hospital, a geriatrician, who told us that older people want to die. They're actually coming to him saying, we prefer to be dead than live like this. And that's a shocking indictment of the way we're living at the moment.
I know, but you see, we're sociable creatures. Like, I haven't hugged my mum, and it's not all about, you know, how sad I am. I'm very lucky. My mum and dad are healthy, but I haven't hugged my mum since March. I nearly hugged her the other day and I got a fright. The two of us jumped back. I mean, I'm a huggy person. My mum's a huggy person.
I'm a huggy person. We're all huggy people. We are humans. But I mean, what I'm saying is, I mean, you're sitting on that committee and you listen to Michael McNamara, who I have to say is doing a wonderful job, by the way, as chair of the committee, by the way, the COVID committee. And I'm listening and I've watched a couple of the, you know, the bits and pieces live on TV and stuff like that, or live online. And there's some wonderful people coming on there. And I know he's done some wonderful interviews. But none of it seems to be getting any further than the special COVID committee. So we're not hearing that evidence outside. I mean, in relation to NPHET, do you absolutely fully support NPHET?
I support the need for public health advice.
I didn't ask you. I'm asking you that. Do you support the people that are there at the moment?
Bear with me for one second.
Okay.
The job of NPHET is to assess all of the available public health information. The job of government is to lead. So absolutely, NPHET have to advise. And then government has to decide what steps are appropriate. But what this government have done is they've put two more layers in between NPHET and the cabinet.
They've just set up another committee. I know, a subcommittee.
They have an oversight. So it goes from NPHET to the oversight committee, from the oversight committee to the cabinet subcommittee on COVID, and then to cabinet. Now, nobody anywhere ever said, do you know what we need to get ahead of this? We need another committee. You know, nobody. That's
but wait, it's a time, and the suggestion has been made in the UK, and the suggestion has been made in other countries, SAGE in the UK, of course, and many other public health emergency teams around the world, that the idea is that you change these committees on a regular basis to stop what they call groupthink. In other words, if you've got 10 people on a committee, be it NPHET or be it whatever committee you happen to have, they're always going to think the same way because they feel the same way. Just like I have a view on it and you have a view on it and we all have a view on it, right? And generally that doesn't change. So is it not advisable to turn around and say, right, there's other immunologists in the country. There's other GPs. I know there's a couple of civil servants on it. There's different people from different walks of life. Is it not fair to turn around and say, let's change that committee. Let's get some fresh minds in there. Different thinking about the way we're dealing with this.
Well, the makeup of the committee of NPHET isn't static, so they can call in other voices. They can call in other people to help with them.
We're not hearing them.
Yeah, and I think, but you know, one thing I have noticed, Niall, and I think you've probably picked this up yourself. The thing that is really, really resonating with people is when you start talking common sense, because people want they know the common sense approach. So when you're saying things like, let's test in the meat factories, let's test in direct provision, let's go to where this virus is and meet it head on and you know, get the testing and tracing right. Let's look at common sense solutions. Let's look at things that make sense. that's what's really resonating with people. You know, where
but
you
isn't the common sense to protect those? Well, sorry for interrupting you. When we look at a virus like this, which is extremely dangerous to vulnerable people and certain groups in society in particular, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't the common sense approach to protect those people and allow everybody else to get on with their lives? Isn't that the way we should try and do things? And I know Boris Johnson mentioned this yesterday, and Tony Hancock in the UK as well said this as well. That we need to look at those groups as best. I mean, we've had 43 outbreaks, or clusters, should I say, in care homes again in the last week, according to RTE yesterday.
That's really worrying.
And I think that's why we're seeing, you know, sadly, the mortality rate slightly go up again. Because, unfortunately, those people are in very vulnerable situations. We did this back in March when we allowed so many people to die, but certainly with stupid mistakes that we made by moving people out from hospitals into care homes, etc. But we don't want to. Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to go down that route again, but it does seem to be happening. But I understand the problem that the difficulty the government have there is it's a balancing act between allowing them to have visitors and protecting them. So it's a difficult balancing act, and all you need is one person to infect the whole care home. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, again, that's where we should be focusing. For example, we have 5 10-minute tests are out there, antigen tests at the moment. They're not as accurate as the test that takes 24 hours, but they're 97% mm-hmm. accurate. So why not have all those tests so everybody who visits somebody in a care home is tested 5 minutes?
But why not ensure that everybody gets their test turned around at the same quick time as the Minister for Health did? That's what.
It was astonishing that he managed to get a test in 3 hours the other night. I mean,
well, I can tell you that made an awful lot of people angry. My phone lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, of course, because if I got it,
people are saying I have waited X number of days. My daughter has waited. I'm at home and I can't go to work and I can't get my daughter to go back to school. People went bananas, and justifiably so. But I would say, look, that is good. It is absolutely brilliant that the test was turned around in that time. It's important that we have a cabinet that functions.
We can turn tests around in 10 minutes, Louise.
Why can't we have everybody's test turned around in that time, and the contact tracing done in real time? This is what's going to work. So, I mean, you know, everybody is at this stage now. I think we're
Let me give you one quick example before we go? I know somebody last week who was in contact with a person who tested positive for COVID-19. They knew themselves because it was a friend, and they rang them and said, listen, I have COVID-19. I'm fine, but he said, I have no symptoms whatsoever. They were young people. I have no symptoms whatsoever. And he said, oh, Jesus, I better get tested. So he rang his GP. He was too busy to see him. He rang the HSE. They said, oh, look, do you have any symptoms? And he went, well, no. He said, well, how old are you? And he told him the age. And he said, actually, you're probably all right anyway. You'd be grand. And he went, right, but can I get a test anyway? We'll see what we can do. We'll ring you back. They didn't ring him back. 2 days later, he rang again. And they eventually gave him, for 4 days later, they gave him a date for a test. Now we're up to a week, right? Eventually, after 6 days, the HSC contact tracing unit rang him and said, hi, you've been in contact with somebody for COVID-19. And we'll organise a test for you in 2 days' time. So now 7 days had passed.
Like that are all too common.
But if he didn't know this person, let's say that was in a restaurant or something like that, he didn't know them.
Absolutely.
He was walking around for a week with COVID-19 and passing it on to as many people as he wanted to. But this particular person took the responsibility of just staying at home. But other people might not.
Yeah, and that's why we need to have the contact tracer. And see, here's the thing, and, you know, I don't want to be unnecessarily critical of the government. I try to be constructive. I did when I was a party health spokesperson. I do now as enterprise and trade spokesperson. But they have had 6 months to get this test and tracing right, and we've had 6 months of, yes, we have the capacity to do X number of tests. Yes, we're ramping up. My God, if I hear that phrase, ramping up.
The most
overused phrase coming from the government. And I feel like saying some days, no, just stop ramping up. Just get the tests up to the level. Stop saying we could do 100,000 tests. Just do 100,000 tests. But get all of it right. So get the swabbing right, get the testing right, and get the tracing right. And if need be, get the isolation right. That is how we're going to effectively live with it.
I think faster testing as well.
The same as you mean live. Not just coexist, in this kind of very structured and restricted way. But
well, we're all living in a bubble, aren't we, really? You know what I mean?
A little bit. And I think, you know, I feel particularly for elderly people as we head into the winter. I think what they're looking at now is, the further period of isolation. And it's all very well to say you're isolated for your own good. And as people get that, we don't want our older people to become infected. But it would be much better if we were managing
absolutely.
The community and getting it right.
Just finally, I mean, 80 billion has been predicted by some of the economists in relation to what this has cost so far, roughly about €1 billion a week now at this stage, right? you know, back in 2018, we had the health service in this country crying out for resources when we had a really bad flu season and people were on trolleys. We all remember the stories of a poor woman, 24 hours, sitting in her own urine, you know, in A&E. Thankfully, we don't have that at the moment, but we're heading back into that again. Where did we suddenly produce all this money for? When we had a homeless crisis, we had a health crisis, we had all these things going on, you know, 2 years ago, we seemingly had no money to fix it. And now suddenly we can pull, well, we can get into debt for 80 billion to fix the country and to put us in a worse situation than we were ever in the history of the state. Where did this money suddenly appear from?
Well, bearing in mind, the reason we need to spend so much money and the reason we needed such stringent restrictions was because our health service has been consistently underfunded over decades. And we needed to be able to create that capacity within the health service. So we purchased in massive amounts of capacity from the private sector at an absolute premium, eye-watering price.
Oh, I know.
Very necessary, absolutely.
What was it, 116 million a month or something like that,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. it was there and plus additional costs. We don't know the full cost of it actually until they tossed it up at the end. But that was, you know, I mean, it was important that we got the capacity. But my God, we paid for it. And the reason we needed it was because we didn't have capacity in the health service. But here's another thing. This was something that really worried me. During the week, we had 80 people on trolleys in the Midwest Regional Hospital in Limerick. So the trolleys haven't gone away. And that's before the flu surge and the winter surge starts. So there's a huge amount of work to be done.
Oh, absolutely.
And the lesson we need to learn from this is, number one, never, ever should any future government impose a recruitment moratorium on frontline healthcare workers, as was done by Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour and the Green Party in previous governments. That should never, ever happen again. And secondly, we need to adequately resource our health service.
We need to keep the students, the nurses and doctors, we need to keep them in the country and not let them...
We need to give them a reason to stay now.
Absolutely.
We need to tell them we want them and we will build a health service that is decent. That is the job. That is the work we need to do.
Okay.
We need to say to them, we want you here, and give them a reason to stay.
All right, listen, thank you very much indeed, Neighbour. Appreciate you coming on the air, Louise O'Reilly. Sinn Féin TD, spokesperson for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Lots of your messages, by the way, coming in as well. I'll play one or two of them after the break, but I want to know how you feel about the new restrictions which are going to be announced today. I'll go through them with you all after the break, but you all have a fair idea. It's not quite a Dublin lockdown, but it's almost. Do you think it's acceptable? Is it fair? I know you're going to say to me, well, you didn't give out about it when it was Kildare and Isle. I did at the time because I didn't believe it was warranted, but however. Do you believe it's fair? Is it disproportionate to what we're dealing with at the moment? Let me know. The number is 087-188-0008. Somebody says, Niall, how many people are in ICU? 14 people in the whole country.
Hi, Niall, it's Mark here. I kind of wonder, why is it they're picking out on pubs and gastropubs and restaurants and all that? What's that about? There seems to be no logic behind it. I mean, they're not stopping anybody going into supermarkets and buying food. But why are they stopping people being in restaurants and bars? It seems that they are simply singling out all these industries and these places and for no real reason. There's just no logic in it whatsoever. Like, there's some motor factors I'm passing by here at the moment. What's to stop people going into the motor factors? And, you know, why don't you just close down the motor factors or, you know, whatever. People walking in the park too long, like, just doesn't make any sense. It's just gone madness. Thanks for that, boy.
Yep, the madness, well, it's going to continue, by the way, because Ireland, or should I say Dublin in particular, will be moving to a level 3 or 3.5 or maybe a little bit more, probably 3.5B version 2, because the confusion over the way these levels are working. Essentially, look, it basically means they're asking you not to leave the county. It does look like, according to NPHET and the advice they're giving to government, we'll know a little bit later on whether government take that advice. They always seem to take that advice because NPHET seem to be the ones that are making decisions in the country at the moment, that they will be closing restaurants and bars. Well, gastro bars are the only ones obviously open at the moment, but unless they can serve food outdoors or do takeaways. And as you heard already, Adrian Cummins mentioned that 80% of restaurants and gastro bars don't have facilities to serve outdoors. Some do have beer gardens, but sure, look, this is Ireland. It's probably going to rain anyway. Also, people from just one other household can visit your home, but that may change today if they go to a 3.5 or 3.7 or whatever it is, and there may be nobody allowed from another home. Again, we don't know, and we'll know later on when Cabinet makes its announcement. Under Level 3, people should work from home unless it is absolutely necessary. To clarify as well, because there was a lot of confusion about this, and the Minister for Justice clarified this the other day. If you live in Dublin and you work in Drogheda or Kildare, you can go to work if indeed you have to go to work. If you work in a factory and it's not possible to work at home, you can go to work. The same way as if you live in Drogheda or live in Kildare, you can come into Dublin to work. you're allowed to come in and out to work because that's considered to be a necessary journey. Or any other extenuating circumstances that were considered necessary. You can do that. They're asking people not to leave frivolously. But this idea of closing the bars and the restaurants who can't serve outside is pathetic, to be quite frank about it. I don't know what Neffet's idea behind this is because all I can see happening, particularly when it comes to younger people who can be a little bit more frisky, and look, we were all young once, I'm not blaming them for that. If they live in Dublin and they want to go out for a meal, they just go to Drogheda or they'll just go to Bray. So now we're encouraging people to leave the city to go for a drink or go for a meal because we're going to close them in Dublin. We're also going to encourage them to have house parties because if we don't let them go to a pub or a restaurant to have a glass of wine or whatever it is or go out with their friends, they'll just do it at home and break the rules anyway. So it's a kind of pointless exercise. Let me just go to Anne. Anne, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Anne?
Hi, Niall. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm. It does seem rather pointless. But anyway, Anne, do you believe it's in the interest of public health?
I was listening to the radio yesterday and I was listening to a guy got on. He was an economist and he got on and he said that the old people should stay at home and let the young people have their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think the government should open the pubs, open the restaurants, open the hotels, leave them open. And then the young people wouldn't be all in a cluster in one...
Yeah, you would dilute the problem, yes.
Yes, it wouldn't, where, as the phrase they use today is, a free gaff. You know, and they all end up there. They all have to go home. They all have to go home to their parents.
Yeah.
And who's to say that they're bringing it home? And the
well, that's always going to be a possibility. And that's always going to be a possibility. And I think we have to try our best to, you know, educate elderly people, particularly or those who would be vulnerable, into
what
protecting themselves.
The yeah. What is the pubs? Now, I not want to go to a pub. But the thing about it is, I was young once as well.
Yeah, and you enjoyed your life, didn't you?
They have to, they can't be drinking on the streets.
I said this yesterday, and I was talking to Lena and Aisling yesterday, and I said, I remember when I was 20 and 22, and I was out in nightclubs, and was out having a good time. I was a DJ in a nightclub, so I was having the great crack. And I feel sorry for young people right now at the moment who are missing out on all the social events of going to gigs, going to festivals, having a few drinks with their mates, having a barbie out the back garden. I think they're missing all this. We're taking all this away from them. I understand public health advice and I understand the reasoning behind it. But at some point we have to say this is not going to work long term. It just won't.
But the thing about it is, Niall, I understand where you're coming from. But what about us? People, us, our work classed as old people. These are supposed to be our golden years.
And what would you, I mean, okay, and
get on
what would you like to
or
do?
Or whatever, and go down to such and such a place. Now we can go nowhere. We're told to stay in.
But here's the thing, Anne, right? What would you like to, as somebody, how old, can I ask you how old you are, Anne?
I'm 65.
You're only a young woman. You're only a young one, Anne.
I know I'm only a young one. But like,
and what would you like to do? I mean, do you believe you're at risk? When you go out and you hop on a dart or a bus, are you at risk?
To the government these days. That is old. Now, you know, you have to think of you. That is old.
But you, I mean, no, I'm asking you, when you go out, and I'm assuming you're going out at the moment shopping or doing whatever you need to do,
go
right?
Shopping, yeah.
Yeah, okay. When you go out, are you worried?
I was in the beginning, but I'm not now. I kind of know. I know what to do.
You common sense. You wash your hands and you keep your distance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I let people older than me go before me, or I'll stand back and I let them.
Well, isn't that what this should be all about?
Yeah, but the thing about it is, Niall, I have a son. That's getting married Friday week.
Where? Is he getting married in Dublin?
No. He's getting married down in the country.
Okay.
And he's getting married up here. But he has to go down to Portlaoise for a reception. Now, that lad has He's ordered cake 3 or 4 times. He's ordered cards. He's cancelled. He's ordered. He's cancelled. And this time now around, he said, it's like this, ma'am. I'm just going to walk up the aisle, walk back down the aisle, and I'm going home.
That's terrible, isn't it? I mean, because I know in relation to weddings, by the way, if you're having a wedding in Dublin up until the 5th of October, they will be announcing today whether weddings will be reduced. The numbers of weddings... What's the numbers on weddings, huh? Sorry? 25 people, level 3. And that could be increased even more. Again, we have to wait for Cabinet today, but it will be at least, it'll be 25 people. So those of you who organised a wedding for 50 people under the old level 2 are now going to be told, sorry, you're going to get rid of 25 people there. I've got to go to Carl after the break. Sorry, thank you very much indeed, Anne, and I understand your concerns.
Niall, how are you doing? I would just like to say on this, I just think that all pubs, all restaurants should all open, stay open from tomorrow onwards or whatever. And we just live with the virus. As all I've been hearing on every radio media and the television media stuff is that these pubs and restaurants have gone above and beyond. They're nearly cleaner than hospitals at this stage to keep the country going and to keep themselves going, keep people in work. And it's tax. And this country is going to go to the dogs. Like every probably country in the world is going to go to the dogs after all this. So we need to start looking after our own people. Look, we have to live with the virus, and I hate to hear that you know, let's live with this virus, but we're going to have to. Otherwise, it's going to be just suicides left, right, and centre, and we're going to be having a totally different epidemic. I'm just so annoyed at the fact that the government just sit on the high perch and look down at us and just go, we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll do the other. You know, they've broken the rules. You know what I mean? So I just think that restaurants and pubs should stay open. You know, what are they going to do? They can't go around and police every single restaurant and pub in Dublin and Ireland. So I just say we stand together as a nation and we just keep the pubs and restaurants open and we support them the way we always have supported them and we just stay safe. And as the first thing they've always said was, wash your hands, wear a mask, social distancing. That's it. End of story.
End of story, not end of story, apart from the government, as far as the government's concerned. I wonder if NPHET, by the way, and the government were on a pandemic payment of 300, which is what it is today, by the way, it's been reduced, whether they'll be making the same decisions. Carl, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Carl?
I don't know.
People are kind of getting a little bit sick of it now at this stage. When I say sick of it, you know, it's getting more difficult for people to continue to be isolated and compliant in things that go against being a human being.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I feel it myself, and I feel it for other people out there and the businesses, the restaurants and that. But Niall, on one side of you have to look at this, right? We locked down, we didn't lock down properly. We still allowed students to do it, to run amok after what our health service and our elderly and other people, what we have tried to do. And our young just went out and ran amok. And also
When you say they ran amok, Carl, how old are you?
Niall, it was on your show about the way they did that street in Cork, the College Street, and there was just bedlam on it. Now, it was on your show about it.
But yeah, but they've always had parties in that street in Cork.
Yeah, but it's worse now.
I don't... Well, maybe it's worse, Carl, because we're not letting them go anywhere else.
Well, this is the thing, Niall.
But you were young once, Carl. How old are you? I'm 57.
And I do feel it for them. But listen, this is to do with our national health. And I feel it for the restaurants and all the businesses that are suffering. But you just have to look across the world at Asia, where scientists and specialists are going to Thailand, for example, at the moment. They've just surpassed 100 days with no cases. There's been 56 deaths in the country to date. They were the first country in the world to locate
and
a
you
case.
Believe, and you believe their stats?
Do I believe that? I do, yes.
Okay, because a lot of people are very doubtful about some of the stats that are coming out of some of the Asian countries, whether they're actually reporting them properly. For example, in China at the moment, they're only testing people with symptoms. They're not testing people randomly.
I'm not talking about China.
No, I'm just talking in general.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about a country where there's people being... There's scientists and wondering how the hell they have did it so well. They've locked down properly. But they locked down off licenses.
So what do you think we should do, Carol? If you were in charge tomorrow, it was your job, right, to make decisions tomorrow... I'm putting you on the spot here, okay?
Right.
So what would you do right now, tomorrow?
Okay, I look at Sweden. Sweden were naive at the start, and they didn't lock down. And then after a while, they put their hands up and says, yeah, we were silly not to think that we would have got away with this by leaving our restaurants and what have you open. And then they were flooded with cases.
And now, if you look at all the articles in Sweden and the papers, people are saying, well, actually, Sweden now has shown the rest of us with egg in our face because they have the lowest case numbers, the lowest mortality in Europe. And everybody's overtaken them and they never brought restrictions in at all.
They did bring restrictions in.
Well, they brought some restrictions in, but it was guidance, I suppose, more so than anything else.
My brother-in-law is an officer in the Swedish Navy, yeah. And they did bring in...
Oh, no, what they said was that they asked people to social distance, they asked people to wash their hands, people to stay at home if they could.
I just feel that we should put... If we're going to go into lockdown again, and if they get all this...
Well, you haven't answered my question. I have 16 seconds. Answer me question. So you're in charge. You're Micheál Martin, right? Or Stephen Donnelly?
I'd lock it down today.
Everything?
I'd lock everything down.
Okay, for how long?
Until the figures started to drop, as we would see.
Okay, so let's go with your theory.
If it took 2 months, let's say it took 2 months or 3 months.
Okay, so let's say we lock down the whole country, a strict lockdown for 3 months, and we get the figures down to only 2 cases a day, right? Okay,
yeah.
What do you do then?
I would open back up the country, I haven't finished now.
Okay.
I would then leave our borders closed. No international travel for the time being.
So for how long?
No
tourism till the virus goes away?
This is what I would do.
That's a ridiculous statement, Carl. That's a fantasy idea.
We're allowing people from red zones to come into the
But your idea is a fantasy idea that you could eradicate the virus just in Ireland when it's still in every other country in the world. So what would you do? Would you put a border in Uri to stop people from Belfast coming to Ireland?
Yeah, I would stop.
Would you? Well, then you're going to start a civil war. How would you feel about that?
Well, no. I would stop people coming into Ireland, the Republic. We can't stop Britain.
So they just fly into... I know loads of people who are coming from Britain flying into Belfast and coming down to Ireland. So what are you going to do with that? So all it'll take is one case to start it all off again. And now you've just wasted 3 months of people's lives in lockdown.
Yeah, that's why I said we lock our borders.
So you're going to put a border... So the only way to lock the borders is close the airports completely and put a border in Uri. Do you not think, Carl, that sounds like the most ridiculous idea in the world?
I wouldn't like to mess with the peace process or anything like that.
Well, that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
But I'm talking about international. Don't let anybody from
England. This is international.
Well, I wouldn't allow them to come into the north.
you've just started civil war, Carl, on the island of Ireland, right? And your plan wouldn't work. People get into this country all the time. They come into this country from two different routes on a regular basis. All it would take, and I understand the point you're making, and this is a fantasy idea being thrown out about people about a zero COVID-free island. And let's say 3 months, you lock everybody down. All the cases are gone. All it takes is one person back in the country to start it all off again because it's all over the world. You can't do that. It didn't work in New Zealand. It's not going to work here.
Well, Australia have their country. Many countries have...
Have you seen Australia? Would you like to live in Australia where the police are literally walking into people's homes and arresting them? Would you like to see that in this country?
If that's what it takes, now to stop this, yes.
All right, Carl, thanks very much indeed for your plan. I don't know if many people would agree with you. I think we have to live our lives as a thing called quality of life as well. Proportionality of restrictions.
Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.